Last time, we noted that Blandon could be very demanding of his female employees, especially Mrs. Jesse, his housekeeper, who one of his family members thought of as more of an indentured servant than an employee, but also of the secretaries who was looking for long hours that served his convenience, not theirs, very demanding. Years later, a longtime acquaintance of Blandon noted, Mr. Blandon liked to have people wait on him and take care of him. When he got up in the morning, he wanted to be able to go right down to the dining room and be served his breakfast. He was the kind of person who, although an extremely good businessman and a very intelligent fellow, was pretty much dependent upon a lot of other people to take care of him. Well, Blandon had equally high expectations of male employees. As an example, the son of one of Blandon's close friends in St. Paul remembered a bitter January night when Blandon arrived for a visit. After some time had passed, the son suggested that he bring the chauffeur to a downstairs recreation room to warm up. Blandon would allow no such amenity. He knows that part of his job is to stay in the car and wait, and that's where he belongs. Well, not very accommodating there, certainly. Blandon's social relationships with men centered to a large extent on his love of the outdoors. He once wrote to Rossman, "It is my belief that in the wide open spaces, men grow to know each other better than any other place. The qualities of fairness and real manhood, I believe, find opportunity for true expression where people can be more themselves, rusticating and picking out those qualities in each other that tend more to show the true character of an individual in any other place or under any other conditions." Blandon shared ownership in a camp on Mary Lake, some 30 miles north of Grand Rapids, and he looked forward to hunting and fishing excursions there and elsewhere. For a long time, trips to Canada and the Boundary Waters canoe area were an annual rite. Surprisingly, in view of his athletic inclinations, he never acquired much of a knack for hunting or fishing. He was especially noted for his inept handling of guns. Inevitably, he seemed to shoot at the wrong time in the wrong direction, and his friends were leery of being with him in blind or boat. And a couple of memories on that, a company secretary. Mr. Blandon liked to fish, but it didn't make any difference whether he caught any. He just liked being out on a beautiful day. He loved to hike, and he was quite athletic. He could stand on his head, and I saw him do it many times. And, of course, Blandon did indeed like to demonstrate his prowess for doing that. But a person who had hunted with him on a number of occasions, Mr. Blandon wasn't too cautious with a gun. One time he was standing behind me, and the gun went off. After that, I made damn sure I was behind him. Another time we were hunting geese in heavy fog. Blandon and a mining executive from Coleraine were off by themselves, and when they arrived back in camp, they had two swans. One of them was really big with a long neck, but they hadn't recognized them, and innocently they shot them. Well, it was illegal, of course, but there they were. They finally were served at a dinner. After all, once they were shot, it was better to use them. Blandon liked the company of men of affairs from St. Paul, Minneapolis, or other metropolitan centers on his excursions. They could talk economics and high finance, but of course his circle of companions also included friends with other interests, many of them from Grand Rapids. Poker games were a source of entertainment on the jaunts, but Blandon played only for pennies. He explained he had no desire either to take money from friends or lose his to them. Blandon occasionally enjoyed a drink, but he was known as parsimonious when it was his turn to offer hospitality. He was inclined to put the bottle away after a single round. Grand Rapids businessman remembered many years later, on a winter hunting trip, Mr. Blandon got lost. He had a whistle and was blowing shrill blasts when I found him amidst deep snow. I wanted to take him out, but I was quite a bit younger than him, and he was afraid I didn't know the way. Told him I would start and then holler to him if the way was right. I went a little distance and called him, and he said, "Is the road there?" I said yes, even though it wasn't, but I knew where I was, and at least it got him moving. We finally did get out, and when we were back, he bought me one drink. Typical Blandon there. The atmosphere in the hunting and fishing camps was informal, and Blandon easily entered into the exchange of jokes and conversation. But as one close associate explained, Blandon had a sense of humor, but he wasn't a humorous guy. In Grand Rapids, dinner parties and holiday entertainments at the villa were a Blandon tradition. Those who attended appreciated the invitations, but often found the affairs on the stiff and formal side. In the words of one frequent guest, a nice evening, but not a gay evening, was the rule. Another noted that Blandon just did not have very many real fun friends, people one would just like to be with informally. By the mid-1940s, Blandon's wife and son had both died. Blandon occasionally saw his grandson Bruce on leave from Air Force duties, accompanied by his wife Rosemary and sometimes their adopted daughter. Bruce visited Blandon in Florida or Minnesota, and relations were pleasant and cordial. Rosemary was sometimes in St. Paul while Bruce was on assignment, and Blandon on occasion invited her to social gatherings there. She always found him warm and friendly, and she appreciated his little favors and gifts. She remembers him with affection. When I was interviewing her, she showed me a letter. She had just become engaged to Bruce and had not met Blandon yet. But she wrote in a letter to Bruce, "Today I saw C.K., and he was simply wonderful to me. Called his office about 2 o'clock to see if he was in, and his secretary said he wouldn't be in till 3 o'clock and wanted to know who was calling. I told her it was me, and she said he was very much looking forward to meeting me. I went over about 3:30, and there he was. Wasn't quite so scared by this time due to the phone call. Well, anyway, we talked and talked. Started with you and me, and before we finished, we were talking about the zoo in St. Louis and the one in San Antonio, and what a keen place his office was to watch the carnival parade. Certainly covered a lot of ground. And believe it or not, I didn't do all the talking for a change. He, too, would like us to be married here as he wants to attend. Also said he'd like to take me to dinner soon, and I hope he does. Wants me to come and see him again and couldn't seem to thank me enough for coming. Gave him the letter you had sent, and he said it was a very fine letter of introduction. I'd love to know what you said in it. But no fooling. After today, I won't ever be afraid of anything. I certainly do like him." Sometimes Blandon's granddaughter Helen took the bus from St. Paul to Grand Rapids along with some of her children, and her visits, too, were pleasant. Nonetheless, close family relationships were simply not a mainstay of Charles Blandon's life. Blandon did draw great satisfaction from the expressions of friendship and appreciation he found through his role as benefactor. A Grand Rapids businessman once stopped by Blandon's Fort Lauderdale home and accepted an invitation to stay for dinner. Blandon had recently celebrated a birthday and received hundreds of greetings. With tears in his eyes, he showed his visitor one of those greetings, an oversized card that had been signed by all 70 members of the Grand Rapids High School Band. To thank him for all that he had done for Grand Rapids, a group of citizens commissioned a formal portrait of Blandon for placement in a public setting. More than 2,000 persons contributed to the project, a remarkable showing of community gratitude and respect. One of the contributors stated, "Mr. Blandon's place in the hearts of the present people of the community is firmly fixed. However, the memorial will help perpetuate his memory in the minds and hearts of later generations." Carol Rossin of Minneapolis painted the portrait, and it was dedicated in 1948. At the ceremony, Blandon said, "This gathering tonight means much to me. It's a demonstration of friendship of which any person can well be proud." He especially thanked the children who had contributed, acknowledging the wonderful display of friendship offered me tonight by the people of Grand Rapids, Minnesota. And I'm looking at a photograph of that painting. It's kind of interesting to look at. It's kind of amusing to look at it because Blandon looks amused. It's not his usual grim expression at all. He actually has Manny's kind of a crooked smile on it, and his face is looking very pleasant and very benign. But it is a nice painting. He's nicely dressed in a suit and vest and tie and looking very spiffy. I'm not too sure where that is at this point. I think the Historical Society has ownership of it now. Blandon also found satisfaction in the annual holiday party he hosted at the villa for Grand Rapids children. Some were needy, and some were the offspring of mill employees. After a turkey dinner followed by cake and ice cream, he distributed Christmas presents to all of them. Some observers found Blandin's social relationships enigmatic. He appeared to rely on and offer more to total strangers than to his own family, personal employees, or friends. While he sometimes seemed cold or even hostile to individuals who approached him, he was at the same time determined to do good for humanity through the foundation. To some, Blandin appeared to be groping for, but not really finding, personal happiness. But Blandin's letters to his close friend Lawrence Rossman belie that image. They portray a man who found meaning in human existence not only through his work and the development of the foundation, but also through his approach to living and through those friends he chose. In one comment to Rossman, Blandin stated, "I have truly enjoyed the many good things of life, but none of them more than the many good expressions of friendship and goodwill that have come from friends, especially those at Grand Rapids." Blandin frequently touched on his appreciation of life in Grand Rapids in his correspondence with Rossman. The publisher, in extending birthday greetings to Blandin, wrote, "You've done things which should bring you a great deal of mental and spiritual satisfaction and happiness." Blandin replied, "I've been the recipient of many messages of friendship and cheer for which I am thankful. Good health and good friends mean much. I have had more than my share of both." Charles Blandin never forgot his early years of struggle and adversity. As a self-made man who had risen above hardship and obstacles, he fully appreciated and supported the principles of American democracy and the opportunities they presented. The progressive political doctrines that he adopted served as a true expression of his philosophy of life. Blandin's perspectives were broad. Even though he sometimes appeared callous in daily contacts and deserved his reputation as a ruthless businessman, and though he sometimes took advantage of others, he liked being in a position to apply the progressive doctrine that called for improving the well-being of mankind. Blandin was not one-sided, and if he appeared enigmatic to some, he knew his own mind. Systematically and with foresight, Charles Blandin worked to achieve his goals and aspirations. Therein lie his personal satisfaction and his relish for life. A couple of more observations on him to end this program. An acquaintance, Mr. Blandin knew a lot of people in St. Paul, but his social life was very limited. He had lunch or dinner with a few people around the athletic club, and they talked nothing but business all the time. Other members of the club C.K. Blandin was not interested in because they were not of the business caliber that he was. I don't mean he was high hat or looking down his nose. He just had an interest in business, first, last, and always. And on a little bit warmer note, a company executive, Mr. Blandin got everyone to go for a ride with him once in a while. He liked to go out in the country. I didn't even know where we were half the time, but that didn't bother him any. He just liked to drive. And if we saw a farmer alongside of the road, Blandin would call to stop the car so he could talk to him. He was kind of jolly, and he would laugh and discuss their problems. It was kind of interesting just being there listening to him.